Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
This recording may contain content unsuitable for children. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Will.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons and Dragons, from gregarious gargoyles to ghostly gondolas. And today's episode, we're talking about dwarves. It's dwarf time.
Dwarf time.
Prepare yourselves.
I cast fireball. The Dungeon Cast.
That's right, everybody. It's dwarf time.
So what do you know about dwarves, Brian?
I know about Snow White and the Seven.
Okay, that's going way back.
Yeah. That was where I first saw dwarves.
Okay.
They're goofy as hell, all hell.
Well, I mean, they can be. I suppose those ones are.
Yeah. After that, it was Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and Gimli's kind of goofy in his own overly serious way. I like Gimli. He's awesome.
He's pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess the Seven Dwarves might be most people's first introduction to dwarves. It's funny enough, actually, a lot of things about those dwarves kind of still ring absolutely true for current dwarves in D&D.
What about them?
Well, you know, they mine. They're like workers that collect gems and whatnot, and they kind of live in caves.
Yeah, what are they up to? They're living alone. They're just hoarding shit.
Well, yeah, I guess dwarves are usually portrayed as pretty greedy humanoids.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't speak for the Seven Dwarves in Snow White. I don't know what they were doing with all those diamonds, quite frankly, but like, you know, I didn't see them in the house, so I don't know where they were keeping them or what they were doing with them.
But
theoretically, they were hoarding them together.
Yeah.
And doing nothing with them because they were greedy dwarves. The portrayal of the dwarves each like being named an emotion, that's I don't know where that came from. That's just fairy tale stuff, so I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like a cool concept. You were telling me that one of those dwarves in particular kind of rings more true than the others modern D&D dwarf.
I think, it's very much a trope that Grumpy the dwarf is kind of like what we think of mostly when it comes to dwarves. Most dwarves are a bit grouchy. They're a bit grumbly.
It's just the grittiest dude.
Yeah, yeah. They're a bit like, they're just kind pessimistic. And They show that tough love.
Okay. Yeah. So the next place I saw dwarves was Lord of the Rings, and those guys they're pretty much doing the same shit that the Seven Dwarves are doing. I mean, they're all holed up together in like a cave or a mountain, and they're getting their gold or whatnot.
Yeah, I would say so. Now Tolkien's dwarves are definitely like the main inspiration for D&D, less so than the Seven Dwarves of Snow White. Dwarves have a tendency to be cave dwellers. They live under the ground. They have dark vision because of that. They tend to be grouchy. They tend to be very... I liken dwarves to stone. There's a lot of things that dwarves share with stone. They're sturdy like stone. They're unmoving like stone. They're stubborn like stone. They live long and old lives like stone. And they live their entire lives within and around stone. Like most dwarves are, by default, stone workers of some sort, or at least metalsmiths.
Yeah, they're working with... you know, they're mining for gems, or they're making weapons and digging.
Indeed. And not only are they always digging and trying to accumulate wealth over time, but like they like to create beautiful things with that wealth. Almost across the board, dwarves in 5th edition D&D and pretty much every iteration of D&D, they are craftsmen. They are creators. They usually worship deities that are like forge gods of some sort or creation gods.
Yeah.
And that's everything from like from jewelry crafting with gems to goldsmithing, silversmithing, just blacksmithing, weapons, armor, stoneworking. Like I would say in most D&D lore, like some of the greatest architecture in all the land is usually dwarven architecture.
Cool.
Yeah.
So dwarves, they seem kind of xenophobic. What's that all about?
Yeah, that's just another stereotype. You know, a lot of races in fantasy seem to be pretty xenophobic for some reason.
They just stick together.
Yeah, like humans will tend to be xenophobic. Elves are pretty xenophobic, and dwarves are definitely no exception. If anything, they're more xenophobic than some of the other races.
Yeah, every time I see dwarves in fantasy, they're sticking together pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, dwarves are pretty thick sleeves. They're very clan oriented. They're very tribal. I think that ties into them being very steeped in their own tradition. Like, tradition means a lot to a dwarf. While elves do tend more towards chaotic natures, dwarves are almost always very lawful in nature, even if that's evil or neutral or good. Like, they usually have their rules, they play by their rules, they have their traditions, they honor their traditions, and it's a very rare dwarf to have an exception to that.
So much like elves, would you say?
Elves have their traditions as well, but like elves, most elven traditions are kind of about being free and untethered.
Whereas dwarves like to be in the mountain.
Yeah, in the mountain, in
with
the
their
rules.
People. Yeah, yeah, they have a...
I'm sure every dwarf child colors within the lines.
They operate under a hierarchy.
Yeah, I would say so. They're very hierarchy based.
And they have strongholds. I mean, those are the stereotypes from watching The Hobbit that I've gathered, is like they're trying to fortify and be powerful.
Yeah, I mean, dwarves, they tend to value loyalty. They tend to value bravery and honor. Those are things that dwarves value like above all other things besides like their inherent greed of like gold and gems and wealth and whatnot.
So if these are the things that dwarves value, and you want to run a dwarf in a D&D campaign, how are you getting your dwarf up off the couch and out of the house?
There's a bunch of ways. You could maybe the dwarf is out looking for a really rare ore. Maybe he's an armorer or a weaponsmith, or maybe he is a jeweler or something, and he's out in the world looking for rare veins to mine and collect. Or maybe he's just a soldier who, after retirement from the military, just kind of had a bored life, and, you know, he hasn't really gotten to, you know, exert his ability in combat, and he wants to lead an adventuring life and maybe kill some orcs and goblins, which that's another stereotype. Like, dwarves have a deep, deep-rooted hatred of goblins and orcs. They cannot stand them, and they will kill them.
And why would that be?
It's usually steeped in some sort of lore in whatever campaign setting it happens to be, whether that's there was a war and like orcs
try to go get their gold and stuff.
Yeah, or whatever it is. Like, it's it's an ongoing trope with dwarves that's been going on so long. I don't even know where that comes from. It's just always been there.
Cool. So dwarves, do they practice combat a lot? It seems like there's some good weaponsmithing going on, obviously.
Yeah, well, you know, as a race that prides themselves on weapon craft and armor craft, they also pride themselves on the ability to use that craft.
Hell yeah.
You know, and
excellent.
Dwarves make some of the best fighters out there, mechanically and flavor-wise.
So what's the mechanical advantages of running dwarves?
Okay, so, well, before we talk about that real quick, there are... in the Player's Handbook of 5th Edition D&D, two sub-races of dwarves. Hill dwarves and mountain dwarves. And the differences between them are actually very minimal, and that's actually reflected in the mechanics. Like, all dwarves get about 80% of the same features, but then the sub-race divides it off a little bit, and they each get two, like, small features.
Okay.
But as far as I've... in all my reading of fantasy novels and of all my reading of the Player's Handbook... the differences between hill dwarves and mountain dwarves really comes down to one thing. Some live in the hills, some live in the mountains.
Very minimal.
That's about it. I think the mountain dwarves are a little bit more traditional, like the real stereotypical dwarves, like the real xenophobes, the real greedy ones. But like, yeah, that's up to you.
Yeah, you have a place to dig.
Yeah.
And it's probably an okay place for a dwarf to be. So if you want a world build and expand your lore, man, I've heard about beach dwarves.
Yeah.
We've heard a beach dwarf.
There is a beach dwarf out there. Actually, I have a friend who DM'd for a bit, and he had a really cool concept going on where the dwarves in a great cataclysm were actually banished or lost hold of their earthly kingdoms and ended up being nomads on the sea in ships, which is like really flipping that on its head, because dwarves in normal lore are like so...
earthbound.
Yeah, so earthbound, and they abhor the idea of sea travel. Like, yeah. It's like the worst thing on earth to them. So,
they must sink like stones.
Yeah, so they ended up having like a floating citadel and like ships and stuff. It was a really dope idea. It was really fucking cool.
That's cool.
But back to the mechanics. So dwarves, as I said before, are like, they're really sturdy. Like, they're short. They're shorter than most humans. Like, I think most dwarves are anywhere from like 3.5 to 4.5 feet tall at the max. But despite being that tall, they weigh as much as like some of the tallest humans because they're so compact.
It's a dense humanoid.
They're dense humanoids. They're like really well muscled. And because of that, all dwarves get a +2 to constitution.
Sweet.
So they're very enduring and they're very hardy. That's also reflected in their dwarven resilience. They have advantage on saving throws against poison, and they have resistance against poison damage. That's reflected in a lot of ways. Like, dwarves are kind of stereotypically heavy drinkers, and it takes a lot to get them drunk.
Right. So they just drink and drink.
It's part of their dwarven resilience, you know? So, because alcohol technically is poison, and they resist poison.
Yes.
So.
Excellent. My character that I play, carries around a brewer's kit with him since he's got a lot of dwarf influence going on in him. And, drinking is, part of his backstory just because of the culture.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see, and I'm surprised it hasn't happened, like a real crazy drinking night with him and Rosden.
Yeah. It doesn't look like that's happening anytime
soon. No, you guys are in a different situation. That's not going to happen anytime soon.
Maybe if we have a dull night at camp and my stuff is ready.
Yeah.
Brewed it extra long, bro.
Oh, geez.
Take it slow. I actually don't know anything about brewing beer. Sorry.
Yeah. Neither do I.
Maybe I should learn.
Maybe. Freeland might.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
Hey, everybody. I want to take this opportunity to thank you all for listening. We really appreciate the support. We do host our podcast on soundcloud.com/thedungeoncast, but you can get it through any of the distributors. I use Podcast Addict. I like that one a lot. iTunes is a popular one, of course. So if you are listening to us on iTunes, please give us a rating and a comment. We really appreciate that kind of traffic. Same goes for our show on YouTube. It's just this show, but uploaded to YouTube with a nifty little thumbnail that Will puts together. They look really nice. So if you want to go check those out, maybe give us a subscribe, hit up some of our videos with some likes. That would help us a lot in the same way it would if you rated and commented on iTunes. Gets us a little bit of traffic, a little bit of notoriety, and that would be really great for the show. Yeah, if you want to reach out to us, go ahead and tweet at us at the Dungeon Cast, or you can send us an email at gmail.com. Also the Dungeon Cast, so the Dungeon Cast at gmail.com. Like I said, we really appreciate you guys, everyone who's out there listening. I'm having a really great time doing this show. I know Will is too. We're really happy with it, and we're happy that you're enjoying it also. So thanks, everybody. Let's get back to it.
As we said, dwarves are short, but despite them being short, they fall into the size category of medium, so they're not small like a halfling or a gnome, but they do suffer the penalty of being small when it comes to their speed. They can only move 25 feet in.
That's
around
5 feet below the average.
Yes, it's usually 30 feet. But there's another trade-off in the other direction where pretty much every other race will be slowed 5 feet in speed if they're wearing any type of heavy armor. Dwarves don't suffer from that.
Hey, that's pretty cool.
And that's partially just to keep them from having to walk 20 feet.
If you're not moving as quickly as another character, then you're probably going to need to take those extra hits.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, I mean, if dwarves were to suffer that extra 5 feet, like, having 20 feet of movement, that's so impairing when it comes to just getting anywhere in the fight. Like, whether you're trying to get away or trying to get more into the fray, like, it's just, yeah, it's really, really, really horrible.
Yeah, you've got to tough it out.
As we said before, all dwarves get dark vision because, theoretically, they spend a good amount of their time underground. They have to be able to see well in the dark.
Right.
And then you were asking me about dwarves and combat training. Combat training is so much part of dwarven culture. All dwarves, in fact, get the feature dwarven combat training.
Cool.
Which gives them proficiency in battle axes, hand axes, throwing hammers, and war hammers. Nice. Which are really traditionally dwarven weapons. Dwarves don't usually use swords, but like I've seen plenty of dwarves use swords. So
yeah, why not?
Doesn't really matter.
Hammers are cool, like flavor, definitely.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Dwarf sword, I mean... Are they holding, what kind of swords are you picturing right now that a dwarf would wield?
I could see a dwarf with like a heavy set long sword in one hand because they're strong creatures and
they can do that.
Yeah, I picture the dwarven swords from Skyrim or any of the Elder Scrolls games.
Okay.
So they got that golden kind of tinge to them and they're a little like sturdier looking. Yeah. For the next feature, all dwarves get a specific tool proficiency. You basically have the choice between three. As a dwarf, you're proficient in either smithing tools, brewer's tools, or mason tools, which is like stone crafting and cutting and sculpting and all that stuff. So that's just a way of saying, like, as a dwarf, like, you're going to know at least one of these, because if you're steeped in your own culture, how could you not?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So the thing, like, smithing is pretty obvious. You know, you can think up of like dwarven craft. Just generally, those are great weapons. If you get one, it's probably going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And then brewing, you know, we talked about the booze. They probably make great booze, high quality liquor, because they need a lot to get drunk.
Yeah, that's dwarven ale.
What about this? Let's talk. Can we talk about the stone stuff a little bit? Because
I guess, sure.
The only thing I can think of is maybe a statue or like the castle that they build within the mountain, like the keeps that they have and stuff.
Yeah, structures and statues and
it's more probably about like the removal of stone.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, and the shaping,
stone quarries, you know, mining stone. Yeah, you would be proficient in all that stuff.
All their bridges inside and like staircases. Those are probably stone and.
Yeah, I would say so. Well,
is there anything? What I'm trying to say is, like, is there something I'm missing? Is there like a thing dwarves do with stone that's like renowned in lore or anything like that? Like, are they great statue makers?
They are. Yeah, that's exactly what they are. They're fantastic statue makers. Usually, in most books I've read with dwarves, like their techniques and their skill work with stone is so renowned that like other races can't even figure out how they did it. It's just like magnificent and beyond what we're capable of as human beings.
Cool. Let's start some HGTV dwarf stone making.
Yeah.
Improve your home. call your dwarf contractor. He's the host of the show.
To expand on the stone thing, all dwarves actually get another feature called stone cutting. God, they get so many goddamn features. This one is basically whenever you make an intelligence check related to the origin of stonework, you are considered proficient in the history skill for that role and add double your proficiency bonus to the check. So like stonework is so ingrained in dwarven culture that like even your basic peasant dwarf knows a lot about it and can tell you all about it. He probably like just by looking at a building can tell you like when it was made or like when that stone was quarried and like
that's freaking cool.
Maybe even where the stone came from. Like, oh, that stone actually comes from the southern continent of Alaron, blah, 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 blah.
Hell yeah. Yeah. So my character, Rohan, does not have that.
No, no.
That's
you are not
too
a dwarf.
Deep.
Yeah.
Too deep.
Yeah, a little too dwarven.
Cool.
Now, it's not listed here in the player's handbook, but I mean, I remember things about dwarves where, like, if they were underground, they couldn't lose their sense of direction, or it was very difficult for them to become lost underground, like,
nice.
Because of their attunement with stone.
Cool.
And then after that, of course, all dwarves speak dwarvish, or I prefer to call it dwarven, because I think dwarvish sounds silly, but whatever floats your boat. But then there's the subraces. Which I told you, there's a very small difference. The hill dwarves are supposed to have a little bit keener senses and deeper intuition. So they get a +1 to their wisdom score.
Cool.
Making them probably a little bit better clerics, a little bit better druids, but maybe a monk. That'd be cool. A dwarf monk. That'd be interesting.
I'm kind of starting to see a theme here because I'm learning as we make this, as we record these shows, I'm learning so much about this game.
Right.
I'm starting to see trends with things with high wisdom, and they usually live for a long time. Or longer than a human, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Well, let's see. There's elves, and there's dwarves. Mm-hmm. What else gets a wisdom bonus off the top of my head?
Well, I guess now that I think about it, they live a long time,
yes.
And they use that time like collecting and gathering
knowledge.
Yeah.
I think you're on to something there. I think that the reason that they have the stereotypes and therefore the ability scores comes from the fact that probably in a lot of the early works containing these races, the nature of living that long kind of makes you smarter, makes you wiser. So a lot of dwarves in these stories are wise. A lot of elves in these stories are wise. And thus, when D&D came out and it came to applying numbers to what they can and can't do, it's probably why they got those abilities.
Yeah, it has to be based in lore. It doesn't have to, but...
But yeah, so
it makes sense to do that.
So yeah, I would actually, we should look into that as we're going over the races and see like
if they
get a wisdom bonus, like how long do they live?
Yeah, let's try to figure out the patterns here, yeah. Or maybe there's information out there that I don't know about that, yeah. You know, kind of deals with how they went about building this stuff because there are people making this game and bless them.
Yeah, bless them. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
So yeah, Hildorfs get that wisdom bonus. And then they get a really dope ability called Dwarven Toughness, which, check this one out. Your hit point maximum increases by 1, and it increases by 1 every time you gain a level. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So you basically, per level, you get 1 extra HP, which at first isn't much, but that adds up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And 1 HP is a lot more than it used to be when it comes to this game. Like, 1 HP is a lot.
Yeah, by the time you're level 10, you have 10 extra HP. Like, that's around sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, that's, you know, 10 damage can be the difference between a hit and a crit. So
true.
Maybe a crit doesn't hit you quite as hard.
Well,
I mean, it's going to hurt. But,
yeah.
But like, you can take more crits.
Right.
So mountain dwarves are next because that's it. That's all hill dwarves get. That's different from like the base dwarf race. It's just those two things. 1 to wisdom, extra HP. That's it. Mountain dwarves, same deal. Mountain dwarves, I guess, are hardier. I guess they're more rugged and they're used to living in tougher terrain. So they get a +2 to strength. Now, that's actually pretty outstanding because that means that a mountain dwarf gets a +2 to con and a +2 to strength with a total of +4. Most of the races are not getting that. Most of the races are getting a +2 to one, +1 to another.
Yeah, that's some big meat.
Yeah. So, a mountain dwarf fighter, he's going to fuck some shit up. So +2 to strength. And then they, on top of their dwarven combat training, they get dwarven armor training, which kind of sticks out a little odd to me because it says here that With Dwarven armor training, you have proficiency with light and medium armor. That's fine. I think that's totally balanced, but it's just weird because when I think of Dwarven armor, I do not think of light or medium armor. I think of plate armor. I think of scale or chainmail. Like, I think of heavy armor.
Something to complement their already meaty bodies.
Yes, but, you know, in defense of the creators of the game, the fact that they get a +2 to strength, a +2 to constitution, if you gave them heavy armor proficiency built into their race, no matter what class it is they're rolling, that's OP. That's overpowered, especially at the low levels. Like,
yeah, okay.
So yeah, and that's pretty much it when it comes to the mechanics. Like here in the Player's Handbook, there might be some variations in other books. I don't think so. But one thing I would like to just mention, we're not going to get into, is there is a third, not quite a subrace, but there is a third version of dwarves that are considered evil.
Not the beach dwarf.
Not the beach dwarf. No. The beach dwarf is the chillest dwarf around. But the Duergar, or otherwise known as Grey Dwarves. Now, they are kind of like what Drow are to elves, where, like, they live in the Underdark and they're evil. Same thing with the Duergar. They live in the Underdark and they're evil.
Okay.
And I've seen the lore on them change from edition to edition. I remember in 4th edition, Duergar were, like, really strongly connected with the Nine Hells and Devils. And 5th edition, I don't think it's quite like that, but that's all for an episode later.
Yeah, the Nine Hells, that's the brand new terminology.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Oh, yeah. And
sounds
we'll
like Dante's
we'll
Inferno.
We're doing an entire episode on the Nine Hells, but we'll do an entire episode on the Duergar. And
cool.
We'll just talk about all that. But just letting you know, it's out there. I don't think it's a playable race yet, but it might be at some point. Who knows?
So if I remember when we were talking about Drow, it's like you could play a Drow, but some DMs won't let you because that's considered like an evil creature. That's like an enemy. You can't play as the enemy if you're running, especially if you're running a hero style campaign.
Mm-hmm. Most DMs that feel that way, they are DMs who come from older editions where the Drow was just, it was always a monster. It was never a playable race. And now that it is, it weirds them out. Like, that doesn't make sense to them.
Right, okay.
I get it. But, like, I think what a lot of people forget when it comes to things like that is that just because Dark Elves or Duergar are evil in the core lore, in the official, like, you don't have any lore of your own, so use ours.
Right.
The vanilla stuff.
It's there for that, yeah.
But most DMs are running their own campaigns with their own lore, and like, you know, any of these things can be whatever you want. Dude, you know, what if halflings are like vicious, rabid, like, barbarian creatures that live out in tribes and everyone's afraid of them? Like, they could be whatever you want them to be.
Yeah, I mean, I've been seeing a lot of Star Wars campaigns where, like, I don't know, all your characters are Jedi and they have lightsabers, but then you just build the mechanics around that. I mean, you could do whatever you want.
Yes, absolutely you can. Obviously if Drow are evil in your world, maybe you don't want your players to be playing them because like that could be a serious issue, but,
it's a style choice.
It's like, a style choice. Definitely. But yeah, Duergar kind of fill that same role.
That's cool. So they live in the Underdark with the Drow.
Not with them. Side by side. They're not usually buddies of any kind or sort.
Because the Underdark is as big as your map, probably.
Yeah, the Underdark. And that's another episode. We'll talk about the Underdark, which sprawls usually throughout the size of a continent, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, back to dwarves. That's the focus of this episode.
Right. Those meaty little guys.
You told me when you were building your fighter, you almost built a dwarf.
Almost.
And
they're pretty sweet.
What was attracting you to dwarves?
You know, I don't have an opportunity in real life to be like...
To be a short bearded man.
To be a short bearded man. I was built differently. No, I like the greedy aspect of them and how they're like kind of self-serving. You know, in real life, that's not... I don't want to be like that, but... This is a role-playing game, and it's a chance to be something that I'm usually not, don't have the opportunity to be. It really called out to me, but I was like, you know what? I think I'm guilty of something you told me, which is like new characters want to play somebody kind of nimble that can get away from danger.
Yeah. I've noticed that a lot when it comes to new players.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. I've just noticed it.
Yeah. I mean, I can attribute it as being experienced as a new player I don't know what's going to happen, like, almost ever. It's all the monsters are new and all the dangers are new, and I don't know how squishy most guys are. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, it's nice to be able to get away, but I'm finding that even though I designed a character that's kind of like that, I can't really get away from anything that, you know, when you're in combat, you're in combat.
Yeah, it's true. That's very true.
I do like my new feet, though.
Which feet?
The feet's called Mobile. And,
what does it do?
It makes it so basically I can like run up and attack a guy and then run away and it doesn't provoke opportunity attacks.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to disengage in order to get away. Yeah.
It also up my movement speed by 10 feet, I believe.
Badass.
And when I use a dash action, which I will be probably doing in the next camp and the next campaign or the next game we play in our campaign, it allows me to go 80 feet instead of like 60.
Holy crap. Okay.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, man. If that guy's in range, I'm going to go grab him.
Yeah. If I've been learning anything over the last few sessions is that you guys are getting harder and harder to kill.
Yeah. It's, it's kind of nice. In the fight before this one, I went down. So it's kind of cool to come in and stomp. It reminded me of the last time we fought orcs. Cause we went in and stomped out those guys pretty quick too.
The orcs are not posing the threat. I kind of wanted them to, so we'll see.
Not yet anyways.
It's cool. But you decided not to go with the dwarf, and that was more for the nimble reason. Was that why?
I also wanted to run something I had no experience in, and the elemental thing is really cool.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty dope.
Yeah, so I just picked, air was cool because, it let me get away and stuff. I thought of somebody that I also wanted to do parkour, which I've done a couple times, and it's been really fun.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So you would think that in all my years of playing D&D, like I would have seen more than a few people play dwarves. And I'm gonna be honest, I almost never see it. I almost never see people play dwarves.
It's a shame.
And it's a damn shame because dwarves are badass. Like I've played some dwarves in one shots mostly, but both dwarves I played a dwarven paladin and I played a dwarven fighter, and they were both badasses on the battlefield. It was great. It was a lot of fun to play, and it was a lot of fun to kind of play a kind of character that isn't so careful and this like traps.
They don't have to be.
Don't give a shit. I'm walking down this hallway. I'll take whatever the traps, have to give, I'm kicking this door down. Why? Because I'm a damn dwarf and I'm not waiting. I'm not sneaking around. So
that sounds like Acquisitions Inc. a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Where Binwin, like he charges the door. So,
right.
Yeah. One of the things I've noticed when it comes to dwarves, when it comes to naming dwarves, and a lot of dwarven lore is dwarves all seem to have last names that are very, they just take two words and mash them together. Whether it's like Fireforge or Warhammer or Hammerstrong or Strongjaw or Stonejaw or whatever. I like it. I think it's really campy. It's really cheesy and I love it. It's great. But
that's fun.
And I think, like, for you, for your dwarven kind of cohorts in your backstory, they have a name like that, right?
Yeah, they do. The Orforged. Volkar.
Volkar, yeah. Which, Volkar, that's a very dwarven-esque name, like, first name, because, like, and this goes all the way back to, of course, Tolkien, as many of these things do. You're going to hear that a billion times in this podcast. But in Tolkien dwarves, and since then, a lot of dwarven names have been very Nordic or Germanic.
Yes.
And, Volkar just rings dwarf to me. So
cool, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it sounds like dwarves are really good at in a combat situation.
Yeah.
They're really good sounding for like traversing a dungeon, especially one that's underground or something like that.
Definitely.
And I know you said that there was a campaign where, all these dwarves got exiled and were basically forced to be on ships and things like that.
Right.
But dwarves don't like that. Where do dwarves suffer? Like, what are their weaknesses and flaws in a campaign setting?
I mean, your dwarf's going to probably have a shit dexterity. So spells are going to fuck him up. Anything where he needs to get somewhere fast or do something dexterous, he's probably going to not do so well.
Dex saving throws
at stealth. I mean, but at the same time, like it doesn't have to be like that just because that's what the ability scores in the player's handbook kind of lean towards.
Yeah.
Like, you can build that dwarf however you want, and he could be real lean and dexterous, and I really like the idea of a dwarf and a monk. I just think that's fucking cool.
Oh, sweet.
Like maybe like a cool drunken style monk. That'd be fucking cool. That'd be super cool.
He's got a special liquor in his pocket. Yeah, it's like a Jackie Chan thing.
And like, and that kind of gives the excuse of like that you can kind of fit the mechanics there, where you have to be proficient in an artisan tool. You pick obviously brewer's kit.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense. Why are you brewing all this like
that's
hard
really
liquor?
Cool.
Because, well, it's part of your fighting style.
Yeah, know? I can't fight sober. What?
Yeah, exactly. So that'd be really cool.
Sweet.
Yeah.
But so they have the dark vision. But it doesn't seem like they have problems going out during the day.
No, not like dark elves where they got the sunlight sensitivity.
Yeah. So they're I mean, I guess they're just like socially just pretty rough to deal with.
They can be, yeah. Yeah, you very rarely have I seen a charismatic dwarf.
Where do you populate your dwarves in your world? Are they in towns? Are they? I've seen some elves scattered across the land, and I haven't mm-hmm. seen any dwarves outside of our home base, which is a pretty eclectic group of,
right.
of people.
And also there's a heavy dwarven population there because it's a very dwarven-esque kind of culture. Yeah, most of the dwarves in my world have like, so there are some like seriously developed and, prominent dwarven kingdom cities kind of like embedded in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys haven't really ventured too far south. It just so happens that like where you guys are right now is a very secluded, region that is like very like classic fantasy where it's just like, there are humans and there are some halflings, and like there are elves on the outskirts, and like dwarves are known about, but it's very, it's the opposite of Baron's Gate, where it's like a whole cornucopia of races. This is a very homogeneous, if you will.
Okay.
But yeah, if you were to venture south in like some of the major trade cities, there's going to be dwarves there. They're going to be different than the dwarves that you've met so far. Like there's going to be cultural differences.
I did run across one blacksmith dwarf. I forgot what town we were in. It was
Fallcrest.
That's right. It was a pretty major place that we went to. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, he was pretty run of the mill dwarf.
Yeah, I mean he was.
I think
just
he had a Scottish accent and everything.
That's true.
Is. But yeah. So dwarves, though they for the most part follow the stereotypes you'll see in my world, there are a little bit of differences. You'll probably find out later.
Cool. All right, everybody, and with that, we're gonna call it a game. We're going to summon the Sage GM now, so everybody do your thing. Believe. You just got to believe.
Hey, everybody. Sage DM here with your Sage DM advice for the week. Remember, next time you attend the Royal Ball, put the lotion in your motion and the glide in your slide. You're welcome for that one. Bye.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of supernatural horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the script?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.